Greetings, Be Aware people.
This is Barry and Sally Letzer.
Hi
we're
there.
With Be Aware Nation, and we're here today to speak about the realm of awareness and to explore how awareness becomes our reality and how our reality is awareness. We really want to bring today's show into a more experiential realm. We want to really look at what it takes to live in a state of awareness and how that state of awareness translates into a living state of knowing and how that state of knowing really sets us up to embrace the unknown. And clearly, as we enter this new year of 2008, what is most clear is what is unknown. The future before us that lays ahead of us in throughout this global family union that continues to grow more intimate every day. We were just having this communication earlier about the internet and its experience to bind us together through the idea of technology. We're brought to a sense of togetherness, but there are still so many aspects of our humanness that have yet to come along to evolve at the same rate as technology to enable us to take full advantage of what technology offers us. So the nature of unknown, the nature of the significant breadth of the layers of unknown and how that unknown translates into our new reality is the subject matter for today's show.
And it's interesting that you talk about the aspect of technology. You know, we have a theory that back in 2000, when everyone calls that the dot-com bust or the internet bust or the e-commerce bust, whatever you want to refer to it, when sites like pets.com were, you know, worth millions of dollars, and suddenly the next day they weren't. There was a euphoria over the internet and technology, and people had built up through the late 90s into making their mark on this in this new opportunity that was so exciting that we could literally have commerce in the ether, and that we could communicate with each other within these groupings. There was a very well-known original social networking site called The Well, and it started off some of the BBS boards, and so it all grew out of these communities, and they flourished into the new grid of technology. And what happened was, is of course, corporations began to see that they too would be a part of this technology and this commerce and this social networking. And so we had this whole run-up in technology stocks and technology investment. And as we all know now, there was a lot of money being thrown at things that really had no business model. But our theory is a little bit, that's all very true. But we think that the psychological aspect of why this crash happened was that people were, as a collective mind, not prepared for the instantaneous connectivity that the internet gave them. And in their already layered lives, as you know, if you listened to us before, we call it layered living. We live in layers. We live in the layers, outside the layers. We live in all combination of layers simultaneously. And the more that we are aware of these layers, of course, sometimes that can be overwhelming because we see the complexity. We have a visceral experience of the complexity as an observer. And so this is sort of the transitioning point where you can embrace the layers and the complex nature of your layered living and actually feel that you can design it and expand yourself to be able to operate in this layered living. And so where we've come now in 2008, we've come a very long way, because also what's happened is as the technology has become more a staple of our lives, not so overwhelming, email, all the ways that we just take communication for granted now, if we're fortunate enough to live in an area where we have connectivity, where we have a computer. And I think, as we mentioned last week, you don't even have to have a computer anymore, because people without access have cell phones. And even if a whole village shares a cell phone, the fishermen are selling their catch of the day within hours of the catch, as opposed to having to drive it in the truck, over the dirt roads, maybe get a flat tire, on and on and on. The instantaneousness of our life that is affecting so many people on so many different levels of access. Access is really available to so many people. So to get back to this point about why there was a crash and why people were simply overwhelmed by the immediacy of connectivity is that also what has happened is that a collective mind in acceptance of things about intuition, of things about awareness, of things about consciousness. We wouldn't have terms like social entrepreneurs. We wouldn't have terms like civil, we call it civil commerce. Some people call it conscious commerce. We wouldn't have this huge rise in nonprofits, which are very quickly transiting from what we think of as a pure nonprofit into a not-for-profit only type of corporation, where it's somewhere in between our regular corporate structure, but it's not a pure nonprofit because they're generating income out of a business model which serves their mission statement of what they would be as a pure nonprofit. But again, because of the economy, it's imperative that people use their creativity to think outside the box. So to get back to this critical point about embracing the instantaneousness of connectivity and therefore embracing your knowing and your awareness. And people are more ready to accept this. And so we've come to this point in time where we're really, really expanding our sense of self in connection to connectivity.
It's so true. That's a great way of saying it. I mean, the very nature of technology really today can be known in very explicit terms, almost in intuitive terms, without any kind of spoken language, vis-a-vis, connectivity. People's thought and idea of what technology has provided for them in their living experience is connectivity. And what the realm, again, here we are, as many of you know who listen to this show, what we're on about is the nature of describing what it is that this connectivity causes within our conscious selves, and how those conscious selves translate that connectivity into a new tangible living form and some form of experience that can be described and defined so that it can be declared, so that it can be used to expand the nature of living. So that when we share with each other, what we're sharing is that expanded sense of self, that expanded opportunity for having an expanded experience. And so connectivity is what brings that to bear in a much more enlivened state. Last week we spoke about the nature of this connectivity and how it spread across the globe and how much of the human family is now impacted. The nature of the fact that over half of the populace now has a cell phone. And as she said, how those cell phones, even one to a community, are changing the nature of life within those communities, and how they themselves, the phone itself, becomes an instrument of commerce. How it itself becomes an instrument and the medium by which these communication carriers are used and passed amongst people to speak their own language links to bring forth the communication carrier of their individual self, their own family, their own grouping, their own place in the community. It's enormous. What is occurring in terms of the influence that is beginning to take form now that these ether communications have begun to happen across the globe on so many layers.
And it's interesting, too, when you look at the mobility of the technology today. We were having a conversation earlier today about what is real community and how do people spend their time within their workplace and then their free time where they consider this a difference between work and after work then becomes their free time. And so many people spend, again, we're talking about people who have access to a television, cable, a digital, you know, 300 channels, that they find themselves sitting...
Information.
Yeah, but they
the
find themselves
stream.
Sitting in front of this instrument that delivers information to them, and then they are passive. And they simply, after work, after being told what to do or telling someone what to do, whatever your position... Then you find this sense of freedom, you do your chores, and then you look forward to this way of accessing information, even if it's passive. And so that is an isolated experience, whereas community is a collective experience. And the interesting thing is that even though people say, well, television is a terrible thing, well, in many ways it is because it increases passivity, and it also alienates people from going out and interacting with others. But now that we have mobile, you're able to actually access information, comment on that information, without being in a vacuum. You're not sitting on your couch yelling at the television. You're sitting in your car.
Or if you are, at least you now have a mobile phone in your hand so that you can begin engaging it at a completely different
level.
Well, exactly,
that's what I'm saying. So these ether communications are now being connected through the individual, and therefore the individual is then reaching out and creating community. It's not maybe the typical community of your neighborhood as it used to be limited to, which is also a very important part of the framework, but it's creating community around a shared experience. So to get back to your point, you're expanding yourself and your awareness and your knowing through this connectivity of your own access and then sharing that with others.
That's it. I mean, it's how you become aware of your experience enough to confidently feel that it's available to you to share, and not only to share, but to share in an engaging fashion. And that therein lies the differential, I think, between what you just got done saying is a perfect way of describing media today. You know, the idea that how it's being described today certainly is as user-generated content. But the idea that this user-generated content is somehow a new form of communication belies the fact that people have always wanted to engage and always have found a way to engage within their communal structures, within the society frameworks. And how that communication has gone on has influenced the growth and development of that various group. The significance of what technology has done in creating instantaneous connectivity has brought forth a force of communication that has altered the formula for how change and adaptation occurs within the human structure. We are not advanced yet enough within an awful lot of the human dynamic in which it happens, in the frameworks, models, and structures that make up the way our lives are led. Those artificial creations, those formulations of creation, of a delivery system, if you will, of a platform for engaging life, were constructed when life happened more slowly, when information gathering and information exchange occurred on a much more nominal basis. The very fact that connectivity instantaneously now transfers the kinds of layered understanding. And by layered understanding, I mean that we are no longer isolated to individual sources of information, nor are we isolated to a type of information flow that comes within one sensory experience, meaning we don't just listen anymore. Multimedia has really become media. And so, as we were speaking earlier, it wasn't very long ago wherein, you know, we spoke about the significant development of technology that was busy creating the realm of multimedia. And what multimedia portended in terms of our human capacity to receive that information flow. Excuse me, to engage that information flow in a constructive, functional manner. And so we called it multimedia because of its associative values outside of our normal realm of what we were accustomed to engaging. Media prior to multimedia was dispensed in, remember, black and white TV. Black and white photographs, AM radio. The nature of simplistic communication streams is no longer in any way, shape, or form what defines us. 2009 is the transformation to digital television. And so, the significance with which this instantaneous connectivity, this concept of technology as the provider of our advancing opportunities is present. It's here now. We now have less than, I think it's actually sometime in February 2009 when the change happens, when the signal literally goes blank on your older television that is not digitally ready. And so, again, we know that to say, if you're not digitally ready, how can you be aware? And how can you merge medias into a mind that matters? It's ludicrous to conceive that we weren't busy doing this at very early ages in our prior development. And so, that's the basis of how humans have evolved. We have been merging medias into our minds to make them matter since the beginning of time.
That's so true. I mean, we tend to think that this new media is all about something that we're not familiar with. But media, from the very beginning, has been our way of communicating. What's different is that as opposed to the town newspaper or the traveling people going from town to town, giving letters to others, all the primitive ways that communication took place, people read books, It took, if you were living in Australia and you wanted something from Europe, can you imagine how long it would take that communication? And so that's all media, it's some form of media. Media is simply communication. What media has become in our minds is somehow tied up into, most typically, a message that is being paid for on some level, so that it will stand out above all the other messages, and the response and therefore the reaction of people who find that this is not the kind of media that they want, that they rebel against being told through dollars what they must buy, what they must see, what they must think. And this is the feedback that technology allows us to have, this kind of exchange with those who have become it mostly in power of our media messages. And it becomes more and more layered as more and more companies are being bought up by the larger media conglomerates. And therefore that mandate through a certain media company filters through to all of their different properties, be it a magazine, be it a radio, be it television, be it TV news, just the coverage of our elections right now, the potential of who's going to be president, and this whole thing about the debate, and the selectivity of why somebody shouldn't be allowed or should be allowed to be on a debate because there's not enough time, there's not enough interest to have everybody who is running on a debate. And so that seems ludicrous to so many people. So we find alternatives to get this message across. Ron Paul is a perfect example of the grassroots movement raising money and raising awareness about someone who on a typical platform just possibly, you know, 8 years ago would never have had this opportunity to be heard and therefore have so many supporters. So there's tremendous hope in being able to refine our media and discern our media and the tools of technology that give people the ability to communicate and therefore create media that is in direct competition. I mean, this is the friction that's going on, that the people's voice is finding ways through technology that is in many instances overshadowing the message that is being paid and programmed for, sometimes in the millions of dollars by these corporations, and the people through their connectivity, again, through their access to one another, is usurping that message and making others who would have blindly listened to that message and believed that message from the conglomerate to be true, are now hearing an alternative so that they at least have an option to make a choice. And that is the most exciting thing about what we're coming into now, is, you know, the rawness of the, if you will call it, the consumer-generated media is becoming more and more and more refined. There probably will be a time when, if it's not a blog, it'll be called something else. But every individual who has some sort of internet access will have a page, some kind of feed where they can always be commenting on their points of view, be it as pedantic as, you know, what their dog does flips in the park to they're running for their town council. You know, it's beautiful, the varied nature of people's input, and it will become more and more ubiquitous. And that will really get exciting.
And that's really where the new communities are being constructed. And that's the significance of how this sort of sense of, as we said last week, hope, you know, that whole ideal of where do we come to in terms of translating this state of awareness into some form of usability. You know, what is awareness as living in a state of knowing? How does that state of knowing translate into, you know, feeling the hope that really is a fundamental security blanket, where harnessing our potential energies as the definition of hope begets the willingness to simply be that state of awareness. Again, being aware. When do those two things become one? And when does that one thing expand itself? And that expanded self that we are now is what is informing the experience of this communication that we're having. And so the nature of knowing begets a particular type of security itself. Using that security to acknowledge this expansion means that we're willing to embrace the unknown with unbridled, excited, enlivened creativity. Because it is that sense of creativity that we bring to bear to know what it is we know. Because it's that expanded sense of self that comes to know itself through creativity. Creativity is the functional language, really, of knowing, of intuition. That intuition itself begets our living experience as creativity. Creativity gets translated through our imagination. That sense of knowing is present in our experienced self so that creativity can take hold of that knowing and use it to imagine our lives. So as we go forth and as we look at where we are and how all of this change is so bountifully beautiful, we look at ourselves within this expanded state and recognize our capacity to express ourselves as creativity, as knowing in process, begetting itself, is imagination living fully. That's how intuition becomes our reality. We speak it. We imagine things. We're taught early on imagination is the key to excited living, if we're lucky enough to have had access to some source that is willing to provide that interpretation to us. That's how far we have to go. That we still can't, you know, depend on the fact that each and every one of us has been sourced with some degree of imaginative fuel, which is connected to a sense of knowing. That our imagination is based on our intuition. Where else does imagination come from? What are we busy doing when we're imagining? What is imagination? And why do we so readily call this concept of becomingness imagination? Why that term? What begets that term? What comes before our capacity to bring imagination into being? It comes from something. It comes from somewhere. Again, that sense of being, where being aware is that knowing. If we be aware, we are knowing. If we are knowing, we have source of imagination. We are that imagination. We are the source. We are the creativity. We begin to expand our knowing selves in a much more enlivened sense when we know we are it. So the concept of looking at where and how we begin to frame these language links that describe the types of communication carrying that we want to be declaring about our experience of living. It rises and falls on all of these intuitional ways of being that we have come to, as human beings, depend on to inform our living systems. Language is just one of them. Language is just one of the ways in which we communicate. It's an extremely important one. Clearly, we would not be where we are. And we recognize when and where and how language does not adequately inform our opportunities. And that's the number one significance of our work.
I think that's also why things are so visual, especially now. Look at technology. Well, or just the saying, first of all, a picture says 1,000 words. It's so true that the symbol itself is beyond the words. It's beyond, it creates a knowing when language is not there. And so the same reason that when you talk about technology's growth, that now the whole infrastructure is sophisticated enough that people, again, who are fortunate enough to have this access, can access video. And they can access a visual expression without the language.
Clearly, I mean, the idea that visualization has always been a component of communication is really, you know, that's...
And that's imagination comes from image, where you are imaging this knowing.
Well, let's take this to a new step. Let's use technology itself. Let's use technology to inform the very nature of what it is we're speaking to. Let's use technology to describe to us how collectively, communally, we've all agreed that to date, the current definition of these terms as described and written down and placed before us on the internet via Wikipedia is the difference between intuition and imagination. And so the definition of intuition on Wikipedia is...
Intuition is the act by which the mind perceives the agreement or disagreement of two ideas. When using only intuition, the truth of the proposition is immediately known right then, the moment it is presented. This is without the intervention of other ideas or deductive reasoning. Now, imagination. Imagination is the ability to form mental images or the ability to spontaneously generate images with one's own mind. It helps provide meaning to experience and understanding to knowledge. It is a fundamental faculty through which people make sense of the world. And it also plays a key role in the learning process. A basic training for imagination is the listening to storytelling or narrative in which the exactness of chosen words is the fundamental factor to evoke worlds.
There it is. I think that speaks very loudly about what it is we're talking about. The very nature of how we as humans have come to where we are right here today, and how technology has provided us this instantaneous access to an agreed-upon definition of language links that are meant to describe our common experience. And so the two terms, intuition and imagination, are placed within the body of Wikipedia, the collective communal ideal of an encyclopedia of knowledge that is generally agreed upon and open to facilitation and editing so that that general consensus can come to bear. And so these two definitions certainly cite the general agreements that most of humans who have access to this technology have agreed upon. And so we recognize clearly now how imagination actually is a process. It goes on to say it is accepted as the innate ability and process to invent partial or complete personal realms within the mind from elements derived from sense perceptions of the shared world. So, when we again look at this concept of self, personal realm, self, as mind, the mind is really something that we as humans, individually and collectively, have yet to be able to fully grasp the nature of.
And let me just interject before we get too far away from this this difference between or the likeness of intuition and imagination. In this section where it says that the basic training for imagination is the listening to storytelling or narrative in which the exactness of the chosen words is a fundamental factor to evoke worlds. And when we talk about our mind, what is the ultimate narrative? The narrative of one's self. And where does that narrative come from? What ether communication is that mind receiving? Does that mind already know? I mean, this is where we get into a whole other tangent about the brain and the mind. And I don't want to go down that road right this second, but I just wanted to point out that if we're talking about awareness and knowing, and we're talking about media, and we're talking about our perception of media today within technology, and our ability to absolutely have an effect on the kind of media that we are digesting and welcoming, that we look to the ultimate media, our mind. And so media is me. I am in media. There is no difference because that narrative is our narrative. And the more that we are able to zero in and absolutely have a relationship with ourselves who are creating this narrative, this conversation in the mind, those thoughts then manifest themselves into this, as it says in the definition, it evokes worlds. And so we live in, again, this layered living. You could almost call it worlds, layered worlds, where we have different perceptions for different environments. And we act differently, and we talk differently. Our language is different. Our ways of interacting is different depending on our environment, i.e. our world, our layers. And so the work that we have cut out for us as we begin to really dig deeper into the shift in conscious awareness is the skill set that it requires to really manage and design our desire so that it manifests out of our very personal and individual and unique narrative.
That's very, very, very well stated. It's very difficult to take these concepts and to begin to illustrate them in ways that make them tangibly functional, that make us all believe that wherever it is we are is exactly where we need to be to begin. There is nothing needed to do. There is nothing needed to know. Everything that is necessary is already known. The opportunities exist every single moment to expand our capacity of knowing. And every single time we do, which we do all the time, and not necessarily without knowing that we're doing it, although that too is so. It's difficult to say we're expanding our sense of knowing without knowing. Yet, in truth, that's exactly how most people live. They are busy having experiences that inform their living system about the most productive, constructive way to achieve what it is they're after. Yet they don't grasp it. They don't grab a hold of it. They don't see it. And so we're left to say that even though their living experience is busy providing them with the opportunity to expand themselves, and indeed they do expand their sense of knowing without knowing that they do. And so, does it mean it doesn't occur? No. And that is the potency and reliability of intuition. The significance of our knowing continues to get layered in to our capacitation, whether we are cognitively, proactively, functionally aware of it or not. And how we embrace that experience, how we bring ourselves to that experience, is what it is we're speaking to within this entire body of work that we're up to and within the way in which we interpret reality ourselves. We believe that the fundamental fullness of life is present in every nanosecond, in every cell of experience. The very nature of reality itself, the very wholeness of reality, you cannot speak to oneness and talk about two. How does two beget one? Two doesn't beget one. One begets two. One begets everything. And so the significance of the ability to always deduct, no matter what is going on in our experience, back down to one. Every single thing that exists, exists for everyone. And so the very nature of knowing, the reason we know that each other knows is because we know. And the abilities to exchange that knowing is a state of living awareness that is starting to take over the very nature of reality itself, because that's the nature of the universe. Knowing. The very nature of the universal presence of being, the very opportunity for us to be present, exists within the field of energy wherein our experience of self as separate from this field of energy is achieved through a connectivity that enables us to know what the universe knows. That's how we're informed. That's what ether communications are. That's what reality is. Reality is simply the becoming of those ether communications, of the ether, of the universe's intentions. And so the language links that we each individually choose are meant to communicate our individual, personal, creative realm. What was it again? The imagination is the listening, the storytelling, the beginning to learn how to recreate the exactness of our fundamental accepted reality. The way in which we sense our reality. How do we come to know our reality? And how do we communicate that? And what else is there going on in life other than our interpretation of self, acknowledgement of that interpretation, and desire to share that interpretation? To engage that interpretation so that interpretation can grow and flourish. And so, all the ways in which we bring that self to bear in the most enlivened manner possible, the way in which we examine the world in which we live, the way in which we experience now, where media seems to be the currency of our times. How do we make media meet? How do we merge medias into minds that matter? How can I robustly, confidently, securely say out loud, media is me. It's me and media. Because media is me states that the information that exists in the universe is ours to translate however we desire. And so how we access that media, how we accept and engage that instantaneous connectivity to expand ourselves in as creative and robust a fashion as possible is what brings to life our shared experience. It's what enriches the humanity within our shared experiences. It's really what causes that shared experience to shine so brightly, to deliver that reward, that sense of living, that there is value, that ultimately our sense of being together is rewarded through that value exchange.
And you know, truly when you're a young child, and what is one of the first things that you learn when you're interacting with others is to share. And so sharing is one of our most fundamental social graces, because sharing is truly intuitively and knowingly the greatest way that we can interact with others, because we all benefit. And so when we talk about this joy in sharing, zest for life, declaring that you are media is me, and that if we maintain this childlike imagination about the possibility of what sharing our media can bring to us, that is where we become enlivened and where we have confidence in our knowing, so that the typical walls that we have either formed for ourselves or as a reflection of society telling us, no, you can't, and our knowing saying, yes, we can, and finding that balance of interaction, that is where the sharing will always break down the resistance. In some way, be it tiny, be it huge, the sharing will break it down so that it will be accessible. It will be accessible for us to share, and it will be accessible for others to receive, and therefore they are ultimately sharing. And so that is the beauty of sharing.
Sharing is really something that we as humans, I, and when we speak about this whole concept of being aware, when we speak about merging medias into minds that matter, when we take this concept of, you know, how do we live in today's world in a productive fashion and use the resources that are present to, you know, apply our creativity to have as fruitful an experience as possible. Sharing really is the fundamental basis of how creativity gets bridged into reality. It's so unique because we've come from so many places where giving is focused upon to those recipients who are in need.
Right.
And yet what's true, that nothing happens that isn't based on sharing. That you aren't able to give if there isn't a recipient. You aren't able to receive if there isn't a giver. In sharing, we're all present, we're all together, and we're all one. It is truly where people in the human family are one. In our world, just as we have done in many instances, we have created an acronym out of the word share. And it stands for showing humans are really equal. And ultimately, when you look at the significance of how we as humans have gotten to today, we have used our common collective goodness to share the benefits of our living experiences to produce new opportunities to expand ourselves so that we can enlarge the scope of living so that we can turn around and share it with each other. So know that we're here continually looking at how we can advance this whole realm of human nature to take our opportunities to be aware seriously, meaningfully, and joyfully. And know that what we want to focus on is the significance of what we can do by sharing with each other and using love as the living system to take us there. So we're very fortunate to have an opportunity to have a radio show like this, to be able to communicate with you all through the ether, and to be able to translate our ideas to you. in a way that hopefully creates some functional inspiration so that you can use your creativity to take these ideas and form them into some way of translating this into your living experience that fulfills your design so that you want to reach out and share it with someone else. Thanks again, and don't forget, you can always reach us at BeAwareNation.com. We're Barry and Sally Letzer. See you in the ether.
See you in the ether. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for joining us, Be Aware people, here at Be Aware Nation, where being aware is a state to put your mind in. So come visit us at BeAwareNation.com until we can continue our conversation next Sunday at 5 p.m. here on BBS Radio Channel 1, where we'll look forward to finding out what you're doing to merge medias into your mind in a way that matters. Remember, life affirms what you believe, so don't believe everything you think. Into it, your way.